From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump stunned the world on Thursday night with his announcement that he would be accepting an invitation from North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un to meet. After denouncing Kim for months publicly, shaming him with names like Little Rocket Man and threatening nuclear war against North Korea, Trump's announcement caught everyone off guard. But Vice President Mike Pence said it's all part of the plan and that it's, quote, evidence that President Trump's strategy to isolate the Kim regime is working. However, South Korea's leader Moon Jae-in likely deserves the most credit for bringing together the two belligerent leaders. Whether or not the summit between Trump and Kim will actually transpire remains to be seen. But joining us to talk about its significance at all, that the fact that it's even being considered, is my guest Christine Ahn. She's the founder and international coordinator of Women Cross DMZ, a global movement of women mobilizing to end the Korean War. Welcome to the program, Christine.
Thank you, Sonali.
Did you expect this announcement on Thursday, or were you shocked like everyone else?
I mean, it's nothing short of a miracle. I feel like we have been the progress and the transformation in the last 2 months. I mean, just even this last week, North and South Korea, it was the first meeting in over a decade that a high-level delegation from South Korea went to North Korea to meet. And then that's when they came up with these groundbreaking agreements. So I felt like we were just recovering from that and digesting that, and then receiving this news yesterday was just extraordinary.
Right, Thursday night is when Donald Trump tweeted that he was going to accept this meeting with Kim Jong-un. He said Kim Jong-un talked about denuclearization with the South Korean representatives, not just a freeze, also no missile testing by North Korea during this period of time. Great progress being made, but sanctions will remain until an agreement is reached, meeting being planned. So for a face-to-face meeting, I'm assuming, with Trump and Kim Jong-un, when was the last time that a sitting U.S. president met with a North Korean president?
It has never happened.
Never, yeah.
Never. We've had two presidents that have met with, but, you know, it wasn't when they were sitting in office. We had Jimmy Carter
right.
and President Clinton.
After they finished their
after
presidential
they left
tenures,
office.
Yes.
Exactly. So this would be the most historic meeting in the 70 years of the longest U.S. conflict ever, right? I mean, it has been languishing on for seven decades. And so as much as, we have seen across the political spectrum, you know, throwing shade at this historic opportunity, I think for the Korean people, it's, obviously Donald Trump isn't the most ideal candidate to be negotiating this, but you know, the way that I have viewed it is I have never seen the kind of organizing that I have seen now, whether it's on climate justice, women's rights, and, you know, now on the Korea issue. I think everybody has been terrified by the prospect of nuclear war. And so as much as, we despise Donald Trump, this is a historic opportunity and we want it to go well. And so that's why I have been really pushing back on this framing that it's the result of maximum pressure. We know that the South Korean president will say that just to appease Donald Trump because we know he has such a huge ego. And if that's a way to get the U.S. to continue on this trajectory, then by all means, we'll say anything to keep them going. But I mean, the true story is that Moon Jae-in has been slowly, steadily, persistently pursuing a diplomatic approach. And, right. you know, he's the one that gets the tremendous amount of credit.
That was just going to ask. I mean, how much credit does belong to Moon Jae-in, who has not been in his leadership position for that long? And we see that he, you know, tried to lay some of the groundwork at the Winter Olympics hosted in Pyeongchang with North and South Korean teams marching together, playing together, sort of sports diplomacy in action. And then, as you mentioned, the historic meeting just in the past few days How much credit does Moon Jae-in deserve rather than, you know, Mike Pence's claim that it's all Trump?
Well, I mean, I would cut it a few ways. Mm-hmm. One is Moon Jae-in for sure gets tremendous credit. But, you know, he rode into power from the Candlelight Revolution. It's the people's social movement that overthrew the dictator that basically maintained a very hardline stance. And so he came in with a very strong mandate from the Korean, South Korean people that said, we want a different kind of relationship with North Korea. So he has, you know, if you see poll after poll, 8 out of 10 South Koreans want inter-Korean reconciliation. And so I guess the credit that I would give to Trump is that his provocative threats, the administration's callous, you know, unabashed threats to wage a bloody nose strike on North Korea that would totally destroy North Korea, and then of course would have a counter retaliation on South Korea, because not because North Korea wants to kill its brothers and sisters in South Korea, but because there are 80 U.S. bases and 30,000 U.S. troops. And so we know the Congressional Research Service has said that in the opening days of a military conflict, at least 300,000 people would be killed, and that's just using conventional weapons, not nuclear weapons. And were they used, it would be up to 25 million people would be impacted. So in that sense, yes, I mean, the Trump factor has been a uniting factor for the two Koreas. I think they have both been terrified by the prospect of a U.S. preemptive strike. And so if that's an incentive to dialogue, by all means, you know, the two Koreans seize that opportunity. And yes, the two Koreas get a lot of credit. I mean, Moon Jae-in did an extended an olive branch. The Olympics afforded a huge opportunity to do that. And
Kim, you know, Kim Jong-un's sister was at that at the Winter Olympics, and apparently
yes, she
also
first,
played a role.
Yes, she was the first member of the Kim dynasty to step foot on South Korean soil. Since the Korean War, since her grandfather fought the Korean War for the North. And so, you know, it's just the amount of progress has just been, you know, just like giving everybody whiplash. But I think we have to stay grounded. And if we continue to accept that the U.S. policy of maximum pressure, you can call it maximum pressure, it's also strategic patience. This has been the policy of the past three administrations, whether it's now the Trump administration, to the Obama administration, to the Bush administration. That hasn't succeeded in getting North Korea to denuclearize. What has been the diplomatic work by Moon Jae-in, who has a more holistic view of the Korean conflict. His mother is from North Korea, so they are, in essence, a divided family. So he sees the whole host of issues. And so, you know, he has said the ultimate goal is achieving denuclearization, but there must be a peace process. And Moon Jae-in understands the need for North Korea to have those security guarantees in the form of a non-aggression pact or a peace treaty. And so that's what I hope that the Trump administration recognizes, that if we want the U.S. to succeed in achieving a nuclear-free Korean Peninsula, we must include the concerns coming from the North Korean side.
Right. So let's just go briefly. I wanted to mention the things that have the war of words between Trump and Kim Jong-un. Trump, as I mentioned, has called Kim Jong-un little rocket man, has threatened to rain down fire and fury. Kim Jong-un has responded calling Trump a mentally deranged U.S. dotard. You know, very sort of kind of embarrassing rhetoric coming from both sides. But I think what you just mentioned just now is a really critical issue, which is what are the conditions for meeting? Usually when there are very high level talks between top leaders in a high profile conflict like this, much of the work happens before the actual meeting takes place to make sure that there isn't embarrassment at the meeting. So a lot of the work gets done beforehand. And I understand that while Trump may say denuclearization, even Moon Jae-in may want that, has Kim Jong-un actually agreed to even consider denuclearization? And if not, will these talks really happen?
Well, he did. He did in earnest say that in the agreement with the South Koreans this past week. The Kim Jong-un, he himself, you know, he's the supreme leader of North Korea, has said that North Korea would be willing to give up its nuclear weapons as long as they were given the security guarantees in the form either of a non-aggression pact or a peace treaty, as they have stated in the past, and also that the hostilities from the U.S. Cease to longer exist, and that is either in the provocative military exercises or the strangulating sanctions, which, you know, are basically targeting their entire economy.
And Trump has said sanctions will remain in place for now, but you bring up a really good point. I mean, North Korea's food security is a huge issue there, and there's been long-term food insecurity and even approaching starvation for years.
Well, right. They definitely had a famine, and definitely, you know, at least a third of the North Korean population tends to be food insecure. Yeah. And we know that recent studies, for example, UNICEF has said that the latest round of sanctions could impact and potentially lead to the starvation of 60,000 North Korean children. So we know that they have a deleterious impact. And I think it's so ironic how, you know, the Trump administration was talking so much about North Korea human rights, yet, you know, we are so unwilling to look at how our government policies contribute so much when, you know, for example, the new Security Council sanctions target exports. So industries such as fisheries or the textiles, like, what does that have anything to do with North Korea's nuclear or missile program? But it has everything to do with employing who works in these textile factories, but women workers. And right. So, you know, I just think let's take a holistic view of this. And, you know, we do see North Korea already making some very big concessions. You know, Kim Jong-un said, we understand that these are annual exercises that are conducted by the U.S. and South Korea. And so he didn't make it a condition for the talks to proceed with Donald Trump. And, you know, that's a very big, but yet they were willing to concede the freezing of its nuclear and missile program. That is a very big That's a very big offering. I mean, we know that what has been on the table for some time is the freeze for freeze, North Korea freezing its nuclear and missile testing in exchange for the U.S. and South Korea halting its exercises. The U.S. agreed to do that during the Olympics, you know, in the Olympics truce, and our hope was that they would reciprocate, but that wasn't even a condition. So I think that it's a very, a very magnanimous offer from North Korea, that you know, they do feel that they have achieved the deterrent so that they are in a stronger negotiating position with the U.S. But if we are truly to achieve a nuclear-free Korean peninsula, and I don't mean just like the removal of 20 North Korean nuclear weapons, but we have to look at it from the holistic framework of who introduced nuclear weapons onto the Korean peninsula, right. The United States, who has threatened to use them in the Korean War, the United States, you know, who has a nuclear umbrella over South Korea, the United States, who uses, you know, nuclear B-2 bombers in the joint war drills, the United States and South Korea. So I think, you know, as a peace movement, a progressive movement in this country, you know, we have to get out of this kind of like one-sided discourse. Let's look at the whole range of issues. I think we all want a nuclear-free world. So let's use this opportunity to say that let's give North Korea the security assurances that they need. We know South Korea and Moon Jae-in understands that. He's been a great broker to bridge the differences on both sides. But we have to understand that there are these fundamental security concerns coming from North Korea, from their experience of surviving indiscriminate bombing during the Korean War, where 80% of North Korean cities were destroyed, as well as their experience of looking at what happened to Iraq and Libya. So that's just my hope, is that, you know, my concern is that there is no capacity in the State Department. And the most high level North Korean expert, Joseph Yoon, quit last week because he was so fed up with the Trump administration.
Right. In fact, there's been several such resignations.
Yeah, there is no capacity. But then, you know, I look at it on the flip side, which is, you know, the Obama administration did have a full force of diplomats and experts, and, you know, they weren't able to achieve anything in its 8 years, which was just a huge disappointment with that administration.
Right. It was just a status quo holding pattern. How likely is it that the meeting will take place between Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump? And if so, where would the meeting take place? Because there are security concerns. There's also face-saving concerns. Where do you think it could happen? And, you know, is there a chance that after all of this, that it might not happen?
Well, yeah, between now and May is a long ways away. And, I think the key is that South and North Korea maintain those channels of communication. And that is going to be the best defense to ensure that there are talks between the U.S. and North Korea. And as to where, that is really a very good question. I've heard China as a potential meeting place. Russia, I'm not sure if the U.S. would agree to that, obviously, but I think from the North Korean side, they would view that as a safe place, or possibly a Scandinavian country, Sweden or Norway. We'll see what the North Koreans come up with.
What about neutral waters? Some have said neutral waters in the middle of the ocean.
Right, or Panmunjom, could be a potentially interesting place. And quite symbolic, since that is where the ceasefire, the fragile truce that basically forced all sides to put down their guns, but where they promised to sign a peace treaty, that would be a very symbolic place for the U.S. and North Korea to meet.
Finally, how important is it for both Americans and Koreans in the diaspora to put pressure on both regimes that this needs to happen? Because this is an important opportunity. Is grassroots pressure important in this particular moment?
Well, I just think it's just so critical for Korean Americans to be weighing in on this because, we have to look at the whole history. I mean, for example, when we saw the two Koreas march together in the opening ceremony, it was just this extraordinarily heartening experience. And I think that
there were a lot of tears of joy. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it's so important to understand the tragic history of Korea's division, which was by Cold War powers, namely by the United States, that drew a line across the 30th parallel on a National Geographic map, and who didn't stand for Korean unity, but Mike Pence, but also Shinzo Abe, the Japanese, prime minister. And, for Koreans that understand that long history, it was the U.S. and Japan in 1905 that signed the secret Taft-Katsuta agreement, where each side basically agreed to look the other way as the U.S. Colonized Hawaii and the Philippines and Japan colonized Korea. So I think it's just really important in this moment to bring in this historical framework because that helps so much understand to how we got to this conflict and how we will get out of it.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Christine, and for sharing your insights with us.
Thank you, Sonali.
Christine Ahn is the founder and international coordinator of Women Cross DMZ. It's a global movement of women mobilizing to end the Korean War. We've been discussing Donald Trump's decision to meet with Kim Jong-un. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.